You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Here's Svechnikov, 2 minutes remaining. Svechnikov with the final. He scores! The Carolina Hurricanes take the lead with a minute. 59 seconds remaining. The Carolina Hurricanes advance to the Eastern Conference Final. They defeat the Washington Capitals 3-1 tonight. They win the series 4-1.
Back for Connor and it's empty. Waiting, shooting, scores! Shifley, cross-ice pass for Connor. Ehlers in front, scores! And there will be a game six as the whiteout prevails for the Jets at home.
Another big night for the home side in Winnipeg. And tonight, the Bandits and Amerks are hoping for same in their friendly confines. Welcome in. It's Sabres Live, and Washington season is done. I am mildly wounded at this result. Marty, have been on the Spencer Carberry Capitals train for an awful long time. Yes, they made another big step forward this year, both regular season and playoff-wise, right? They get to round number two. But why does it feel to me that they are a long ways away, if ever, being able to take that next step? I don't know what happens. Like when you see a series loss and then you just go, now what?
Yeah, it's like I have the Sarah McLachlan "We Will Remember You" song in my head right now. And it's a downer for the Washington Capitals, right? It's like you beat Montreal in the first round. Montreal was, you know, team 8 in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, yeah, you beat them. They didn't have their number one goaltender. And then you played a real team, a real playoff team in the second round, and you lost in 5, and they completely dominated the Carolina Hurricanes. I feel dominated the Washington Capitals in every aspect of the game, goaltending on. So, yeah, it feels a little, somehow, I feel like the Washington Capitals, who were the third best offense in the regular season this year, third best. Anyway, they were top three. They like completely lost their mojo offensively. And maybe they waited too long to put Beauvillier back up on the top line with Strome and Ovechkin. Beauvillier got the goal that got it going yesterday, while unfortunately they weren't able to keep it going, and they lost it late in the third. But, you know, Protas came back. He was banged up. He came back. I don't think Wilson had the same impact. McMichael didn't have the same impact. Pierre-Luc Dubois didn't have the same impact. And then all of a sudden you're like, if Ovechkin doesn't score a ton of goals, is Washington the same team?
Right.
They were good without Ovi in the regular season, but in the playoffs, Ovi had 4 goals in the first round, only 1 in the second round, and that was a big difference. So I feel like they need Ovi to be great again next year for them to have the same type of season that they did have this year.
Well, I mean, probably stupid for me to prematurely put this out, but I've done it before, so shame on me. But I can't imagine that Ovechkin is going to be at the same pace and impact next year. And
we've done that every year for the last three or four years, right?
But there is a reality that will hit at some point. And yeah. I don't think Protas was anywhere near proper, healthy, however you want to term it. So that's a 30-goal guy not having an impact. Tom Wilson, as you said, 30-goal guy not having the same impact. Dubois's a funny study in all of this. 0 goals, so hard to accept that. I don't think you were expecting 5, probably 2 or 3 through 10 games, right? Mm-hmm. That keeps him on a comparable pace. He's more of a playmaker, but he's also, as you know, documented, supposed to be more of a shutdown guy. And the thing with Carolina is you can feel like you're shutting them down, but they are are one of the kings of low scoring wins, right? So,
and balanced team. So Washington plays Montreal. Pierre-Luc Dubois is going to shut down Suzuki, Caulfield, Slafkovský. That's his job. So mm-hmm. at the end of the day, if you win and Suzuki, Caulfield, Slafkovský don't have the impact, Pierre-Luc Dubois has done a good job. But now you play Carolina. Who do you shut down? Who do you say you have to shut down for you to beat Carolina? There's not one guy. Because you shut down Svechnikov, Au is going to pick it up. You shut down Au, all of a sudden Jordan Staal picks it up. There's Jordan Staal, his first goal of the playoffs. It's a big goal. It's a big goal. Yeah. It made it 1-1 and got him back in the game. It was a bad goal. But so Dubois' impact against Carolina was diminished because mm-hmm. it's not the same. I got to shut down your top line and that will neutralize you.
And this series was a fascinating study of, to a certain extent, roster overhauls / significant tweaks, on-the-fly tweaks, because both, you know, are playoff teams already. But I'm more focused on the blue line. And so from Washington's standpoint, it really couldn't have gone better. Their offseason of change, but you talked through the regular season about how fortunate and healthy they were on the blue line. And then when they lost Fervari, it changed things a little bit.
Yes.
It wasn't the same group of six. But Carolina has also been retooling and masters at this also, right? Like bringing in Goss Despair, bringing in Walker, knowing that more importantly, like what they lost, right? I mean, at the very least, Brett Pesce, but it's
Mikko Rantanen.
Yeah, but I'm focused on the blue line here. But you know, and even, you know, with Chatfield not playing last night, Nikishin comes in. But there's still a big opportunity for this group to look significantly different next year. Brent Burns moves on.
Yeah.
Dmitry Orlov could move on. Mm-hmm. I think it's really, really, really interesting to maintain an identity while changing the chess pieces on the table.
Well, I think that Carolina, what we've seen now and what we understand and the way that the Carolina Hurricanes, Rod Brind'Amour and now Eric Tulsky as a GM have done it, is that you're a piece. You're a piece of the puzzle, and that piece does not just fit in one place. It could fit in multiple places. So, yes, they will make significant changes, I think, moving forward, but they do that in season, in games. Like Jackson Blake was playing top line. And all of a sudden, he's fourth line. And then Jack Roslovic is a healthy scratch. And then he's second line center. And you're moving pieces around. Mm-hmm. I think this is a team that understands that every morning you're going to show up to the rink and the lineup could be different. And the players are okay with it. The management is okay with it. It's just that's how we do things here. And it has put a little bit of a scramble on the Washington Capitals. How do we balance this out? Who do we play against? I feel like the Washington Capitals never gotten a rhythm. The games were tight. They were low scoring. They were very tight. But it didn't feel like Washington was the better team at any moment in this series. Mm-hmm. Like the shot attempts, the shots, it was always on Carolina's side. And I get, you know, it's Carolina. That's the way they played. Mm-hmm. And I also get that in yesterday's game, Carolina wins 3-1. There was an empty net, so it's a 2-1 game. Both goals were bad goals given up by Logan Thompson.
Yep.
So Carolina wins the game, wins the series in a game where you say Carolina was the better team, but their two goals were bad goals. Logan Thompson made spectacular saves. You know, the six save he made in the first period, at the end of the period. Yep. Like, he made spectacular saves, but he gave up two bad goals. That was the difference in the game.
It really was, and obviously this is one where history typically in sports doesn't tell a story, because when you're trying to do quick reference points, you look back to a certain year and see what happened, and you go, my goodness, how did Logan Thompson ever lose with those numbers in the playoffs? Well, you got to then look at the highlights, because there were some tough moments for a guy whose numbers look really good, just like they did during the regular season. But, oh, shocker, when your team doesn't score 3 to 4 goals per game for you, like the regular season, it makes it that much harder to win. And you end up 5-5 this postseason, which is not what the expectation was this year and or moving forward now that he goes into his extension. But to go to Carolina, they're fully deserving of more attention here as they're the winners in all of this. I mean, Gostisbehere, Hall, Stankoven, Blake, Roslovic, Robinson, Walker, Jankowski, who's injured, has only played 3 games so far. Mm-hmm. Will Carrier, who, again, doesn't get any mention in any of this, right? No points through 10 games, missed half the season due to injury. He's not going to come out of the lineup. He plays 11 and a half minutes a game and does so as effectively. I wouldn't say quietly, because anybody on the wrong side of Carrier doesn't feel that it's quiet. But you know what? Like, Marty, that's a long list of names to insert into a perennial playoff team.
Yeah, it's a long list of names and their balance. So every player, all 18 skaters, played at least 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see that often, especially in the playoffs. And, you know, you kind of are going to go 3 lines, and then maybe you're going to have 3 lines plus 1, and somebody's going to play 6 minutes, somebody's going to play 7 minutes, even on the back end. Look, Nikishin played 10 and a half. Mm-hmm. Eric Robinson played 10 and a half. Jesperi Kotkaniemi played 10-22. Mm-hmm. Those were the 3 lowest numbers. But you also don't see anybody playing 25, 26, 27. Mm-hmm. Walker and Slavin, 23 minutes. That's the most on the back end.
Yeah.
And by the way, Spencer Carberry, when talking about Jacob Slavin, he says, I don't understand how this guy is not a Norris finalist every year.
He is one heck of a though. Huh? He had a huge gaffe last night.
Yes. Yeah, but I mean, do you think McCarr and Hughes don't make gaffes? Yes, they do. We all see that.
I think it's hilarious, because he's like a plane flying with the banner behind him now.
Yeah.
Best defensive defenseman in the NHL. Like, it circles overhead of every NHL arena. No commentator can resist the urge to attach it when talking about Slavin. So I laugh.
And when the coach brings it up, it's significant too. I know. Like, Spencer Carberry understands the game, and he's so good at making sure that he communicates some of the things that he wants to talk about. And he just was like, look, this is great. So now what we got on social media yesterday is a bunch of people jumping on that bandwagon and saying, oh, I had him 5th in my voting for the Norris this year. I'm like, you took an opportunity to jump in there because Spencer Carberry said it. But if Spencer Carberry says, oh, man, that Slavin guy is overrated, nobody would have said anything.
Yep, 100%. So we'll talk more about the Canes and their success and Freddie Anderson and what he's done so far with Shayna Goldman, our Friday staple. That's at the bottom of the hour. Obviously want to get into what else happened last night. But I feel like we could do that with Shayna. I do want to put a significant emphasis here on Friday night, Blue Cross Arena, big night in Rochester. This is a huge, huge, huge game against Laval. It's game 2. It's only a 5-game series. They need to get the win tonight to get things even. Head coach Michael Leone addressing the media this morning.
We need Dev to play good. Like, anytime he's given up, I guess you would say, more goals than he's used to giving up, he's always responded. But I think it's about the other 5 guys on the ice. We got to defend well. You look at the first goal, turnover to get a couple slot chances, those things. It's more the team. Like, if we're playing good, Dev's seeing about 4 or 5 grade A's a game, like in the Syracuse series. Played well, but every game we played in that series, the expected goals for was under 1.5 for a 5-on-5 play. Dev's going to stop most of those shots. What happened last game, the opportunities that we gave up were off of mistakes, a lot of chances. So that's on the guys. Our team defense, when we're good, Dev's going to see about four or five that he's got to make, like every team gets. But like it's got the other guys, we got to do a better job cleaning up that stuff.
And you have to control what you do. But there's a reality, yes, Marty, that you can impartially speak of here. And that is you are going against the best team in the American Hockey League this season. Mm-hmm. One that has defeated you 7 of 9 times. And you talk about series and familiarity and, you know, matchups and all of that. Like, who benefits after a game one? Laval? Because they just go, we did it again. Like, I know we were neck and neck, and at one point during the season, we were actually trailing Rochester for top spot in the division, but we are the Kings right now of this division and this league, and we believe that we have the depth all the way through the lineup to just keep doing it and even switch goaltenders tonight in the process.
They're doing, right? They're doing a goalie rotation. So the first two games of the series in the first round, well, second round, Laval didn't have Caden Primo. He was up in Montreal backing up Jakub Dobesh. So Fowler played the first two games. As soon as Primo came back, he played game three, lost. They went to Fowler game 4-1. Start game one, Primo. Game two now is Fowler. It looks like they're doing a rotation. Why? Because they're really comfortable. Yeah. Laval is comfortable with where they are and their team and their two goalies, which I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but if you're Rochester and you're looking up, you're like, we better be good. Better be good, because that team is full of confidence on the other side. They showed it in the game one. They were down 3-2. They came back. We tied it. They didn't stop. They played with a ton of confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, the great Brudini, who listens to the show all the time, actually made a comment. He said he felt like Laval bullied Rochester a little bit physically because he was watching the game, right? He was at the game. So that's how confident Laval is. Laval's not a big team. I don't think they're a big team, but they have a couple of guys that have size.
You know,
but
they're the most penalized team in the American Hockey League?
Yeah, they play with an edge. That's what they do. They play with an edge. There's their captain, what's his name? Condonto or whatever. Like, what's his, I'm butchering his name, but anyway. Like, he plays with an edge. I know. I'm putting you on the spot. That's like, you know,
I'm busy looking at other things right now.
Low-hanging fruits here. But they play with an edge, and that's what they've done all season long. They're not huge, but they play. So you got to respond. But that's how confident Laval is. And if you're Rochester, you're going to have to push a little bit. You're going to have to win that one-on-one battle. And Michael Leone talks about turnovers that led to goals. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what Laval does. They put you in a bad position, and then all of a sudden you turn the puck over. You're going to have a little bit more in your game to be able to battle that and gain that confidence that you can go in and win 3 of the next 4, because that's what Rochester do.
So the reason you threw me is because, you know, I'm not a big captain guy anymore.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, and obviously I should know this stuff, but it's not something that I pay particular attention to. So when you were referencing Lucas Condotta, I'm surprised that you're saying that he's the captain. Like, but I get it. I mean, he's played 200 games in the AHL, and it's just hard because there are kind of more familiar names that we know. But that's the beauty of Laval. Like, they have it. Like, that's obvious when they win the regular season the way they did.
They have AHL it. They have guys that have been great in the AHL and continue to be great.
So it's interesting you say it that way. Is that more because of what we focus on here and the player development / transition from Rochester to Buffalo and all the first round picks we often speak of? Or, like, Montreal has obviously brought in youth at the highest level and growing pains for sure. Slefkovský among them, right? But I feel like you might be underselling Laval a little bit here, because like, Montreal has been out of the mix too, so they've been acquiring some pretty high-end draft picks.
But they don't have Lane Hutson, and they don't have Caden Gooley, and they don't have, like, but they have Mayu and Reinbacher. Why? Because while you still have a lot of young players that you can insert in and prospect and say they are going to have, but you look at, you know, they have Laurent Dauphin, and it's like, well, could he play in the NHL? No, he's an AHL guy. And they have Josh Waugh, who's played in the NHL, but he's more of an AHL guy. And Barry Boulay, who was with Tampa, he was the guy that everybody talked about in the AHL, saying he's the next that should make the step to the NHL. He would be put on waivers, be picked up, and whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's not gotten there. So he's a strong AHL guy. So for my time with Rochester, we had the Dean Sylvester, the Mike Hurlbut, the Dominic Pettis, right? Like the Denny Hamel. We had those guys that were fantastic AHL player. And that's why we had that edge. We had that edge. Was there some prospect, NHL prospect on the team? Absolutely. Some guys that played long time in the NHL, even before me, winning the Calder Cup in 95, mm-hmm. no, 96 for Rochester. They had the Wayne Primeau and Curtis Brown, whatever, but they had the Dane Jacksons and the, you know, well, I don't think Hudo was there then, but anyway, they had guys.
I think
that's
why we like Rochester this year too.
Exactly. They have those guys.
Yeah. So I'm. What's your who is if there's one thing like your key to tonight, if you will, and obviously we'll try to keep it on the Rochester side of the ledger.
No, I'll keep it on Rochester. I think Devin Levi is a key. And look, was it on him game one? No, but you still gave up five, and there was some puck management and all of that. But throughout the season, the Amherst have had that type of team that, well, they've always had Levi to pick you back up and to make that save. And I think Laval got to him. There were some screens. There were some plays. They got to the front of the net. So I think Levi is going to be a really big point of emphasis. And then I look to your forwards. You did score four goals last game, and you were able to get yourself in the lead and then tied in the third period. Mm-hmm. But your top guys, the guys that Kulik, Roseanne, Oslin, like they are going to have one of those top games where they dominate. And it doesn't have to be on the score sheet. Like if they, like Kulik had two assists, great. You have 2 points. Maybe he only has a point, an assist or a goal in this game tonight. But does he generate the chances? Does he have puck possession? Is he, like, that's the type of game I want him to have in this one.
Well, I think, and if it does line up the way I'm anticipating with Oslin, with Kulik and Roseanne, which was an in-game adjustment, this speaks big in many ways. Urgency, mm-hmm. what the coach saw as far as exactly what you're talking about, and not that they should require it, but whatever. I mean, it's small sample sizes. It's like, if I'm going to lean on Kulik and Roseanne, I'm going to try to make them the best versions of themselves, mm-hmm. and Oslin makes them that right now. Right. And you could say it then takes away potentially from other areas. But if Mason Yops and Brett Murray and Lucas Rusek together can't do exactly what you were talking about with Laval and what they have across the board as experienced difference makers in the American mm-hmm. Hockey League, then that's on them. They have to be able to do that. Yops is captain now, and Murray's been, you know, riding a career year. And
Rusek is Rusek's the type of guy. And sorry, Lucas, but you may not be an NHL guy. You may not be an NHL regular guy, but you could be an AHL top guy, mm-hmm. like a guy that you're being trusted, that will be the veteran that will lead the way. And that line has to be able to do what the veterans for Laval have been able to do. That has to be the counterpart. It doesn't have to be 100%. 5 points, but it has to be taken over the game type of performance.
And if Konsta Hellenius can continue his production, but do so on a line with Kozak, who, again, needs to garner a lot of the spotlight here. Mm-hmm. This is actually like a perfect situation for Tyson Kozak to show why he got the NHL time and why you should still be entertaining the idea of becoming a full-time NHLer. And to have Wahlberg on the other side, that gives you the size. Hellenius, we've already talked about a number of times how the coach loves that when there's more confrontation, he plays better. So I think this line in particular should be even more fun to watch for people that hopefully make their way down to the block party starting at 4 o'clock in Rochester, weather permitting, and get in there for game two at Blue Cross Arena tonight. I'm super excited. Like, these games have been so close, so dramatic this year, and game one was no exception. So why wouldn't it be that perfect Friday night drama tonight?
And look, block party starts at 4, as you said, 4 to 7, games at 7:05, puck drop. Doors open at 5:45. If you're going to go to the game, it's Friday. Hopefully weather is going to be great. Go enjoy the block party. Go in for warm up. make warm up loud. Like I remember going in the Rotch in the playoffs and warm up was loud and I loved it. The energy was going. Like this is the last game at home in this series. Make it where it is going to be a hard place for Laval to play in. We know that going to Laval, it's going to be loud in Laval for the last potentially three games of the series. They have a great building over there. Mm-hmm. Let's have everybody in there for warm up and be loud at 6:30 when the boys get on the ice.
All right. Again, that one tonight, Flow Hockey, AHL TV. If you can't make it to Blue Cross Arena, but here, like, in our backyard,
yes.
The Bandits tonight. I mean, this is...
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This is... I just don't want people to ever underestimate how great this run has been for this Bandits team. To be in a finals for 5 straight years and have an opportunity for a three-peat beginning tonight against Saskatchewan. I get giddy about this. Like I'm as curious today about individual player statistics in season and career wise about the National Lacrosse League as I am the National Hockey League. That's just how I'm wired. So I can't help but just like ooze orange in Bandit land and around it tonight.
Yeah. By the way, I get it. You know, that Saskatchewan goalie, Frank Sigliano, pretty good. He won goalie of the year, but how did Matt Vince not win goalie of the year? Like he is dominant in that. And I want him to play with a chip on his shoulder today and be like, you know what? Let me show you how it's done, buddy.
His shoulders are big enough.
It is big enough. Come on. I mean, he's been awesome in the playoffs. So, I mean, but how did he not win goalie of the year again in the NLL this year?
There's probably a limit, right? Like they started not giving it to Gretzky after a while, right?
Oh my God!
Honestly, I know. Like it's a thing. I don't know who pushes the narrative for this thing, but I feel like historically in all sports, it's like, okay, we know who the best is, but we kind of need to spread this around a little bit. So Matt will be fine with another title.
But I'm the one that needs to be pushing the let's go. Like he deserved it. He should have won it. Yeah. And now you're facing the guy that won it. Let's go.
Party in the Plaza, of course, leading in tonight. And of course, we've been telling you all week that we want to see you embracing your Banditland fan frenzy in preparation for all of this. So you go to bandits.com/frenzy. And what we're looking for you to do, just show yourself off how you're getting ready color-wise, enthusiasm-wise for the finals, which begins tonight at 7:30 at KeyBank Center. So send in a photo. Again, bandits.com/frenzy. And there's an opportunity for you to have the chance to win an exclusive experience this offseason, including a player appearance. It's Buffalo, Saskatchewan, 7:30 tonight. This is Sabres Live. Shana Goldman coming up.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We will get to what's happening or about to happen in the NHL tonight very shortly, but we left last night's Winnipeg-Dallas result hanging in the balance for the arrival of Shana Goldman from The Athletic to dive in, because this has to be a statistician/analytics dream. Isn't it? It feels like baseball to me that we are talking about such dramatic splits right now. Yes, you can say exclusively or almost so for the Jets, but the Dallas Stars are 5-1 at home and 2-4 on the road. They're feeding this narrative as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what the Jets are doing, it's so interesting, because you look at teams on the road in the playoffs, and before last night's games, nobody who had not won a road game advanced to round two except for the Jets. Yeah. Like, it says something. You don't need to be these like road ice warriors to win in the playoffs, but you have to be able to win away from your home rink. And so I started looking at the numbers of it before the last night's game, because I was curious, like, is it as simple as the Stars at home are keeping Dylan Sandberg away from Mikko Rantanen? Like, that was my best guess, because he's such a good shutdown defenseman and it would make sense if he's so freed up. But it seems like the Stars don't care about that matchup at all, right? They're saying Mikko Rantanen can cook against anybody. The big difference I noticed was that on the road, I thought Mark Scheifele was pretty invisible. And I thought at home he looked a lot better, especially in game two. So I checked the numbers, and that split was pretty different, right? In games one and two, I think the Jets did a good job keeping Scheifele away from the Rantanen power versus power matchup. And then in games three and four, that's what the Stars angled for. And you could see the numbers backed it up that, you know, the Stars were controlling play in those minutes. So then you go to last night's game, and he played 328 head-to-head with Rantanen. It's a big difference for him, you know, in those minutes and away from them.
Something that the numbers won't show, too. I think Connor Hellebuyck is fine. He gave up 5-3 in the two games in Dallas, but I think it was the circumstances, like the goal that shouldn't have counted that made it 3-2 in game three, and then goal a minute
the
later.
The one that took 10 years to review, yeah, that
one. It was
one.
A terrible call, a terrible NHL decision. But anyway, I think Connor Hellebuyck is fine. This is not St. Louis where he got pulled three times in three road games. I think he's fine. And two, I think the Winnipeg power play was really good yesterday, and then they got maybe a lucky goal, but not a lucky goal. I don't think it was a good goal given up by Ottinger on Ehlers on the 5-on-3, but that opened the floodgates, like floodgates duffer. Sometimes you're 0 forever, and then you score one, and it opens. I think those two, Hellebuyck factor, I think he's better than a lot of people give him credit for, the two games in Dallas and the power play, could be the difference tomorrow night in game six in Dallas.
I mean, who's to say? I'm very curious how this is going to go. But I think the other difference, too, is against the Blues, I think the defense, which was the Jets' strength all season, looked really bad, right? I think the Blues figured out how to exploit it. I don't want to say better than the Stars, but differently, right? They were, the rush shots they were getting were really dangerous. They were allowing those screens, which was challenging Hellebuyck. We talked about it, how he didn't face enough clear-sided shots in round one and how many tips and deflections that there were, and the Stars are playing it differently. And it is interesting, because you would have thought, like, maybe the Stars would have taken notes from that series and said, oh, maybe that's how we have to change our game. But they're such a good team, they really don't need to change their game. They can just play to their strengths. But it's something to know, like, that is the best way to target him. And I think Hellebuyck has looked a lot better, but he's faced very different shots this round.
Last one for me on this series, because we got a lot to get to. Is it virtually impossible that Dallas could lose this series? The Jets cannot win on the road, so that's the game six feather in the cap of the Stars. But if a miracle happens, Pete DeBoer also cannot lose game seven as he is the greatest in the history of the game player, goaltender, coach. So what are we looking at here?
I would be shocked if the Dallas Stars lost three straight games. You know, like that would be something else. There are other teams, if you said, oh, the Maple Leafs are going to lose three straight, I'd be like, of course they are. Sure. But the Dallas Stars, I do feel a lot differently about. I don't think that they're going to, but I want to give the Jets credit because that's a team that I think we've all questioned their playoff pedigree for some time with guys like Hellebuyck, guys like Ehlers, who look who's coming to play in big games. Yep. And I want to give them credit for how they're playing with their backs against the wall. Can they maintain that for another three games? I don't think so. Could they for seven? I would be a little surprised, but I could see it happening too, because we can't just write off Winnipeg because they're going to be on the road, right? They have to win at some point. And you could say, well, maybe if you get past those playoff demons of Hellebuck's back and Ehlers is playing in the playoffs and you went on the road, now you have the juice to win a game seven. Sure. But I just still would bet on the Stars.
Is the Carolina Hurricanes now becoming maybe a cup favorite? And I know Toronto and Florida are playing game six tonight and Florida's, you know, on everybody's mind, but the way Carolina is playing and the way Freddie Anderson is playing, he, according to Hockey Reference, has had 8 quality starts and 9 starts this postseason. And I think the one that he didn't get a quality start is the game he got hurt. He gave up a goal on 7 shots. Like every game that he started and finished was a quality start. Would the Carolina Hurricanes be a Stanley Cup favorite because of the play of Freddie Anderson?
He's definitely a part of it. I don't think he's the driving force because, you know, He has saved 15 goals above expected, according to Evolving Hockey. Great. That's the best in the league. When you per 60 it, so you account for the differences in games played, which I think is so important in the playoffs, he's still number one with 1.7 goals saved above expected per 60. If you start digging into the numbers, his goals against, that's the best. The unblocked shot rate he is facing is the lowest, and I think that's important, right? There's a difference. We look at unblocked shots because that's what a goalie has to get set for, and that's what expected goals uses because the way blocks are counted and tracked is a little bit funky. Yeah. But, you know, he's not facing a ton in that regard. The shot quality is not up to the usual heights of the Canes this year. And that we know, right? The shot quality against. When they do allow a shot, sometimes it's a little bit more dangerous, and it's not – so he's not insulated – like the best goalie in the world, right? But I think what he's doing with that workload is so impressive. It's so different than Kochetkov, too. So I think he would be a big reason for their success. Can he handle that against a team like the Panthers is going to be the big question, because I think that they've had it easier in terms of opponents and what they're doing offensively. And the team work in front of the blue paint is huge, right? Like, they're suffocating forecheck, and they're so good defensively, so it's going to be different once they go up against someone that has the depth of the Florida Panthers and has that forecheck to counter the Canes. It's going to be I'm assuming it's the Panthers, but it's going to be a much different animal for the Canes. But I do think that everybody counted against them because of the Rantanen situation when they made all these low-key ads over the last year and interchanged their lineup in a way that is so impressive. Guys like Walker and Hall and Stankoven and Jankowski and Carrier, like, they fit so well. So I do think this is a much better version of last year's team, but I think it would be an absolute grind a series against the Panthers.
I will say this. My prediction next round will be Carolina over Florida. It would be Toronto over Carolina. Ooh. And I still think the Leafs have a chance.
I would not go with the Leafs, but I listen. that would be something. That truly, truly would be something.
Do you?
If the Leafs get that far, they're not letting Carolina get in the way this time. That happened in 2002. That's not happening
again. Yeah. Now, do you think, like, Craig Berube this morning said he's not splitting Marner and Matthews? I thought he should have splitted them in the third period of game five and tried something. But he didn't. And he says, it didn't really work this season. Do you give him 20 minutes, Shayna, to, like, get going? And if it doesn't work, you have to split them. You can't go in thinking that's your best option in game six tonight.
Yeah, I don't think it's the worst idea to say, okay, Tavares and Marner go together and Nylander and Matthews, right? We've seen them work together before in previous postseasons, in previous seasons. Mm-hmm. These guys do have chemistry, and I know how to play with each other, but it's not an easy decision. I mean, if you want to break it up further and say, okay, you need to spread them across three lines, that hasn't worked this season, right? And that's why there was so much pressure for them to go out and get depth scoring, and they chose against it. Because you look at it, It's such a tricky one. This is such a tricky one because I don't want to let the core four off the hook. Please, let's preface it that way first. I think Austin Matthews needs to be better. I also think he's injured. I think Mitch Marner needs to be better, and it doesn't matter what he did earlier this postseason. I think Nylander and Tavares could do more. But at the end of the day, when those four are not on the ice in this series, the Leafs only have 2 5-on-5 goals, and they've allowed 6 against. They have a 31% expected goal share when the bottom six is on the ice. So as much as it falls on the top guys to be the top guys, I think they still need to figure out what to do with this bottom six because the Panthers have a third line that can score. And in games 1 and 2, when the Matthews line neutralized the Barkov line, as they did, that they kept them off the board, right, for two games, Marchand, Lundell, and Lucarelli put up 4 5-on-5 goals.
Yeah.
The Leafs don't have a counter to that. So I get the decision to say, okay, let the top four be the top four and let them click. But what are you doing about the bottom six to give those top guys some support because they truly do need it?
So, teams that are out, Minnesota, Marco Rossi. The name seems to keep percolating here as far as will he stay? Will he be dealt? Needs a new contract? How big will it be? How do you view Marco Rossi and his value? He had the unfortunate reality of playing bigger minutes and producing while the team was going through a massive injury void. And when the big gunners came back, all of a sudden he went from 18 minutes a game in the regular season down to 11 in the playoffs, and it would appear that someone in his camp, maybe him too, is a little sour about the situation. So, like, what is Rossi's value? Should a team like Buffalo and or somebody else be looking to acquire Marco Rossi?
I think he showed two things this year. One, he could play with someone like Kirill Kaprizov. And everybody might look at that and say, who couldn't play with Kirill Kaprizov? I could play with him. He's so good. You would be wrong. Because top guys can carry their own lines. Sure. But to keep up and complement those top guys is a true skill, right? There are elite utility players and elite supporting cast. Guys like Zach Hyman, right? They have value because they can keep up and complement Connor McDavid and not just be dragged along by Connor McDavid, which is the version we saw of him this year. So there's a big difference between that. And I think Rossi shows he can be, you know, a true top six player. The other part of it is, though, when Kaprizov was hurt and when he didn't have as valuable of teammates and, like you said, played more, he also stepped up to the plate. So I think it shows what he can do in his own right and how he's coming into his own. And yes, it was a delayed start and there were a lot of factors between the deployment and his own health that, you know, played into it. But I do think he's showing he's a very good player and he's a top six center, right? Like if he could be a really great second line center in his own right as a play driver or be a top guy that plays with the top line winger, that's not a bad thing. So I think he should get a nice new contract. I think that they should skip the bridge deal. I think if I'm him, I go for the bridge deal and then cash in on the next deal. But like something in that 5-year range to $6 to $7 million might sound really rich right now, but it's what Evolving Hockey projects. They say if he's going to go for 5 years, it would be a $6 million contract. And I think I've said it before that I think the middle class is going to benefit from the cap going up the most. I think that's pretty fair for someone that is in their prime and is going to help you now and in the future. So if the Wild don't want to pay that, I think another team should send an offer sheet his way.
Well, offer sheet, if you go over 7.02, it's a first, second, and third. I think you'd have to go to that level. You'd have to go like $7.5 million to make Minnesota have to say, well, no, we're not going there. So would you go and do a 7.5 closer to 8, maybe on a 5-year deal, and give up a first, second, and third as compensation for Rossi?
I would need more term then, right? Like if you're going up to those heights, I would say it had to be a longer contract so you don't have to worry about this in another few years. I think over the 7 million range is a little bit rich, but and you look at how much cap space Minnesota has and you would think they should be able to match it. But I do wonder if they, you know, kind of give pause to hitting that $7 million range when they view him. And he is a 2C in Minnesota because they have Joel Eriksson-Ek, who is their rightful number one.
Is he a 2C though, based on what happened in the playoffs and how he got dropped down and the fact that Brock Nelson's a UFA and he's from Minnesota and blah, blah, blah?
I think we're all jumping to Brock Nelson going to Minnesota way, way, way too soon. Like if that's speculation and smoke and there's true kicking the tires and there's a real chance, then I think a team doesn't need to go to those heights, right? Because then the Wild would obviously view him as a 3C. So then you don't need to go to $7.5 million to get him. I think the context around it is going to be really interesting to see who the Wild pursue. Because if it seems like they're not as interested in Rossi being their 2C, I don't think you need to jump through as many hoops to get him.
What about Jim Hiller in L.A.? Ken Holland said they'll be aggressive, and he gave his coach a vote of confidence in. He had a great season. They had 105 points. They were great defensively, and he will learn a lot from what happened this year. I would have gone in a different direction, but Ken Holland is going to stick with Jim Hiller. What do you think that does in L.A.?
I do think Hiller was a very good regular season coach. I also think Hiller's decisions cost them the series. And it's not just the coaching challenge. That was terrible. Mm-hmm. It's the defensive shell, not learning from the mistakes of games 1 and 3 and 4. And it kept going on, right? And it just kind of waterfalled from there. So I think that if he's going to learn, unlike what he did on the fly, and he has an offseason to reflect, maybe you're onto something there. But I don't know. I think I would have gone in a different direction, but I think you just have to be ready to make a change if necessary. You can't let this one play out. If the team doesn't look different and he doesn't adjust his strategies, and you see that within a month or two, you know, that's going to be tough. If you see those weird decisions in the third period start coming up again, it's obviously a different environment, right? And he might not be in the position to make those same kinds of decisions. But if you see the constant defensive shell, I think you have to make a change there, right? I think the roster could use another high-end, high up-tempo, high octane kind of forward, but it's going to be really curious because Ken Holland's track record as general manager is very hit or miss. And you go through the Edmonton era and you go, well, he got guys like Carrick and Henrique who were really good for them, and Ekholm, and he signed Zach Hyman. And I think his son Brad Holland is a little more of a numbersy guy, and I wonder how much influence there is on there. But you also look at, you know, the Darnell Nurse contract and Jack Campbell. So it's a mixed bag for the coach and the general manager. We'll see how they how that marries.
See you next week.
Yes.
Sounds great. Shana Goldman from The Athletic, back after this on Sabres Live.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Nerds. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Not much time left in the week here, Martin. We have a minute to go and two big games to discuss, and maybe birthdays if you want, because we have to say happy birthday, Thurman Thomas.
Thurman Thomas, the great one. Big number. He wasn't wearing 43, but 34 was good enough, and I love it. So that's great. Happy birthday to the great Thurman Thomas. We got some big games. I think Toronto pushes it to a game seven tonight.
Me too.
I think that's going to happen. Joseph Woll will be fine tonight. It wasn't on him last game. And then tomorrow, I think Winnipeg is going to also push it to game seven.
I
but
agree.
That one is weird because that will be on Monday night, right? So they play Saturday and then it will be Monday. So the next round won't start until probably Tuesday or Wednesday next week. So, the Oilers and Carolina are going to sit around and wait.
Does Cale Clegg score again tonight for the Amerks?
Well, I think he's probably a minus 200 if you can bet on him, because he's scoring in every game.
Amazing. Amazing. We'll see what the Amerks have in response to the Rocket in game two tonight at Blue Cross Arena. Enjoy the weekend, folks. We'll see you soon.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.